Talk. I'm your host, Steve Cooper. Remember, I'm only as hip as my guests. And I got to tell you, my girlfriend was in town last week, and she was in air. You heard her in studio. And it's very weird. I miss her, and what I really miss is I miss her making my bed in the morning. I mean, every day I got up, she'd be like, are you going downstairs? And my bed would be made. Me, I don't make it at all. And also, she Windexed all my counters. I mean, I cook at home all the time. But I will sit there, and I won't clean, like, I got cleaning people come whenever she's coming. I have cleaning people come in, so I'm like, the hell with it. Why should I use my supplies? And I clean. Which, by the way, my cleaning people are really pissing me off because the guy sits there, he steals my paper towels, and I'm paying him. He should not steal my paper towels, and I know that because last week I came down, and my paper towels went from a full roll to a small roll, and they were the paper towels that rip in, like, each sheet is in two, and I don't use them. So I was very pissed off. That's all I'm gonna say. Anyway, we have a great show today. I found this guy. I saw a posting. He does comedy, and then his name sounded familiar. So what I ever do is, because I know most comics, and I don't know, it's more the LA comics, you know, people, because I don't want to hit the clubs out here. But I saw his name, and I said, I have to check it out. And I always IMDb someone if they say, you know, I check their page out, their comic. I think he's booking Bar Lubish or something like that. And then he said he was on the show Neighbors. So I said, hey, well, you know what? That's my thing. If you have credits, you're coming on the show. So anyway, it's Patrick O'Sullivan. How you doing, Pat?
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for having me.
Do you like Patrick or Pat?
Patrick. My childhood friends call me Pat or okay. Patio.
Really?
Yeah.
Pat.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
Really? I'm guessing you're Irish. No, you know what's funny about when you Google you, there's also a hockey player named Patrick O'Sullivan.
I know.
So I was like, wait a second. It can't, but that's, so do people ever, like, are you a hockey fan?
No.
Do people ever, like, get you, like, if who follow hockey, hear your name and think, oh my God, that's Patrick O'Sullivan?
Yeah, and at one time he played for the LA Kings. So okay. That was very...
So where are you from originally? I don't really know anything about you. I saw your Facebook, and I saw you. He's a good real people, and go to YouTube, type in Patrick O'Sullivan, and it's a good real. It's good to walk and stuff, and very good impressionist, which is good because I hate crappy impressionists. We'll get into that, but I remember it used to be like there was this guy, like everyone back in the 80s was doing Jack Nicholson.
Yeah.
Everybody. And even like this, my friend Brian Williams, not the radio guy, but this African-American comic out at Philly, he would sit there and he would do the hair, and like, you know, and it's like, you're African-American, we know you're not Jack Nicholson. So where are you from originally?
The San Francisco Bay Area.
Okay. Now,
a town called Millbrae, it's wherever the airport is.
Now, did you always know you wanted to do stand-up comedy, or what made you get into this acting, and even starting impressions? Because I think a good impression is awesome. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I think impressionists must be real perfectionists, because I would just get frustrated and go, screw it. Like, it's, but did you do impressions as a kid, or how'd you get started?
Yeah, I mean, as a kid, I was always in trouble.
Okay.
And I imitated my parents a lot. They have Irish accents.
Are they from Ireland?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I did that, you know. My father was like this, I can't solve the jumble. What is this word on the jumble? And then my mother was like this, oh, Patrick, I don't know, I'm worried about you.
Now, why don't you have the accent? Because so many, like, I see so many, especially the Armenian kids, right? They always have the accent. You were born here. Like I said, you walk into my neighborhood and it's like, you were born here. I don't get that. Because your parents were from Ireland, they spoke with accents, but you have a very clear voice. I mean, how does that happen? Do you know?
I don't know, maybe individually speaking, it has more to do just rebelling against everything they were about. And maybe, I don't know the Armenian kids. I think that's just a Glendale accent. Is that an Armenian accent?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to go into that. I saw an Armenian driving school, which is an oxymoron.
Uh-huh.
So, you start impersonating your parents, and did they get pissed or did they enjoy it?
Well, I really only did it to my mom. Didn't really do it to my dad. That wouldn't be a good idea.
Was he a big man?
No.
Irish is just badass.
He's scary.
Irish are just badass.
He was a professional soccer player.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in England.
Oh, wow. What team?
Sheffield United.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's cool. So they came over later, or?
They met here in the Bay Area.
Now, was it after he was retired? No, of course not.
No. But they're from two very different parts of Ireland.
Okay.
So they met. There's kind of this community of San Francisco immigrants in the 60s and the early 70s and the bars in San Francisco, and they all kind of hung out together. And I don't know. I think that's what happened. I wasn't there for that.
Yeah, I hope I am not. It's not. So now you're making fun of them. You're making fun, you're doing impressions. Now, were you doing impressions in school? Were you going, like, were you doing with teachers? Or what? I always wonder what happens with, I mean, did you know you wanted to do impressions before you wanted to do comedy, or did you want to do both?
I never went, oh, I want to impersonate that guy. The earliest thing I can remember is sitting in front of the TV and trying to mimic Howard Cosell.
Okay.
On Monday Night Football.
Can you hear your Cosell?
God, I haven't done that in years, but ugh.
That's what I love on impressions. You know Don Friesen? He's a comic.
Yeah, I've heard of him.
He came on, and he does a John Lithgow. Like, you never don't say it. I made him do the Lithgow on the show because it's such a random. I mean, no one's doing Lithgow.
Yeah. I mean, all I can remember is maybe.
I won't put you on the spot.
Here, live from Candlestick Park, it's the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah, that's all I got right now.
You know what's funny? I think every kid, like, tried to impersonate him, but yeah. Now, like, kids don't know who he is. Isn't that scary? Because he's such a part, like, I'm 48, so he's such a part of my life.
Right.
And now these kids don't know. So did you watch Rich Little and those people? Did you watch Impressionists?
I remember Rich Little. I mean, I don't know. Impressionists, it was just a thing that some of my friends I could do well, and I just did them. And then occasionally, like, Scooby and Shaggy, I would do that shtick. But I never concentrated on, I'm going to do that. And now, even now, I don't do it as much.
Okay.
Even though I created those shows, it was more like, oh, that's an idea I want to do, and I think that'll work, and it'll be fun. So that's why I did that. But, yeah, I think it was imitating friends. And just, I guess, you know, trying to cure that childhood boredom.
Right.
Of just, what am I doing? I'm just entertaining myself and others.
Well, what point did you know you wanted to get into this crazy profession? I mean, it's like, because some people, like for me, I used to watch comedy, but I went to college. I got a degree in business management, which I knew I wasn't going to use. I think you used to either go to law school or do stand-up. I mean, it was just weird. But what, was there a certain thing that you said one day you just went, wow, I want to act or I want to do comedy? Because you do both, and you write, so you're multifaceted.
Yeah, I took a weird path, because when I was growing up, I wasn't like a theater kid or anything. I was more of an athlete.
What'd you play?
Baseball, basketball, football.
Oh, so
everything but soccer.
Yeah, did your dad get pissed at that?
Absolutely.
That's right, like, you're disowned. Why? I don't care if you get F's in the report card. You didn't play soccer.
That basically just described my childhood. So I did that, and you know, I was always in trouble in school, though, so I was always for goofing off.
Right.
And, you know, I didn't realize at the time, but that's what I was doing. I was entertaining people. And once I realized I wasn't going to be a pro athlete, then I said, well, I'll be going back to Cosell, kind of. Maybe I'll be a sports broadcaster.
Okay.
So I went to junior college. I took broadcasting. I was kind of focusing on that. And it wasn't until I transferred to San Francisco State and saw that, like, they had a theater department. I'm like, oh, acting. Yeah, that's what I got to do in my life. And, you know, doing stand-up and all that, too, kind of all came together then for me. I needed it right in front of my face. I'm not that smart.
So, you know, that's a lot of people like me. I didn't know how to get into comedy. I didn't know my mom saw. I took a learning annex class in Philadelphia. Right. And it basically, I mean, my thing is, you either have talent or you don't.
Right.
Okay? And you can't be taught to be funny.
Yeah.
If you have it, you can't be taught to write jokes.
Yeah.
I mean, because if you could, there'd be a lot more better comics out here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, so I think, like, some people don't know where to do it. Like, for you, it's weird because you're like, wait, actors, you don't think the whole process, and then you take the class. So you go to San Francisco State,
uh-huh.
And now you go into the theater.
Right.
Now, did you start getting work with them? Did they put everybody in a play, or did you have to audition, or how's
it? No, it's actually very competitive, and it's also very, the students are very driven to do their own things, because you're allowed to kind of use the space. I mean, I did some crazy stuff there. I put on the first ever stage adaptation of The Shawshank Redemption.
Really?
Yeah.
See, now that, I love that movie. So that was, but did you do it as a comedy, or was
no,
it?
No, totally. I gotta say, you know what? It wasn't bad. Wasn't bad.
Were you Andy Dufresne?
Of course.
I miss my friend, Andy Dufresne. Andy Dufresne. I love that movie. So, that's cool. So you're looking outside the box. You weren't going in straight, going, okay, I'm going to do, you know, Taming of the Shrew.
Sure.
So did you direct that too?
I directed it. I adapted it. I co-directed. I adapted it. I was Andy Dufresne. I made the poster. I don't know.
How did you do the settings, though? Like, I guess all in the prison.
Everybody asked that. Well, you know, the key thing, you know, how they break through the hole in the wall?
Right.
In the cell? We had an intermission then, and we brought in an exact duplicate wall with a poster over it when people were outside, and that poster had the hole behind it.
Okay.
You know what I mean? but that I forgot about it. That's what happened when I was I had dropped out of college, and then I saw The Shawshank Redemption, and it changed my life. And that's when I went back to college.
And then you did that play. Now, what was some other stuff you did? Did you just do some? I mean, just some. I'm expecting to hear some really out there stuff, which I love this kind of crap.
Here we go. So on the absolute opposite of that, at the time in school, an article came out in the school paper about this glory hole in the humanities building.
Okay.
Which was a hole in the men's bathroom where you could go get serviced by another man. Okay. And this article kind of caught fire around school. Everybody was talking about it. I'm like, well, you know what? I'm going to write a 10-minute play about this.
Okay.
So I put on a play. And it was great because, you know, the one thing I remember about that is a gay guy came up to me right after the show, and he's like, I came here fully expecting to be offended, and I thought this was great.
What? I mean, okay, well, just how do you – what was it about? I mean it was people – talking in between the wall, like, oh, that's good. Hey, by the way, just the Niners. You know, what was it?
I mean, that's how it started out, but then over the course of it, the guy behind the wall kind of helps the other guy solve his problems.
Okay, so that's cool, though.
Yeah.
So you do that. You do the Shawshank Redemption. You do two totally across the board. And now, is it Glory Hole a comedy or no?
Yes.
Okay, totally. I was going to say.
However, if you think about it, both had a wall with a hole in it.
See that?
Shawshank
exactly.
And Glory Hole.
And both had two men who were very close. So there you go. So you do that. Now, do you graduate?
Yes, I did it.
No, I'm just saying, but so you graduated. So then what's your path then? Did you want to come to LA? Or when did you start doing stand-up? Or how did it all mesh together?
I was doing stand-up then. I was more of a dabbler.
Now, where were you doing at the clubs, like Punchline, stuff like that?
No, they have a lot of... I remember there's the Brainwash Cafe, which is a laundromat / stand-up place. A place called the Luggage Store, a lot of the cafes, things like that.
Well, San Francisco has such a good... talent pool. They always have. I mean, it's just, you know, who were some of the guys around when you were doing it?
Well, some of the guys are still around. The guy that I kind of got to know fairly well, who kind of made me, he was kind of my, heartbeat on it, where, oh, you know what, I think I could do this, and it was Connor Kellicutt. He's still up there. Very funny guy. He's been doing it for years, and he headlines up there. And then I would go to the clubs and see, like, Bobby Slayton, Margaret Cho.
Slayton was on the show, and I just let him talk. I said, you know what? He's like, I'd say, and what amazed me about Slayton was he's much smaller than I thought. He gives a very, like, when you see him, I don't know why, I always thought he was like 6'2". I'm 5'10", he's shorter than me. And I was like, how could you? Well, I guess that's why he's called the pit bull, because he's little and he's angry. It makes sense.
I went to his house to interview him. I did a documentary on Lenny Bruce.
We're going to talk about that, because I saw that. I believe that's on Netflix.
Yeah, it's on Netflix and all that stuff.
I may stream that tonight when I get home.
Cool.
After my show.
I have a copy. Maybe I'll give you one.
Hey, I love stuff like that, man. I get a lot of stuff. I Am Comic. Jordan Brady. I have his copy.
It's great.
It's a great movie. I Am Comic.
Now I'm worried the executive producer's listening and knows I'm giving out copies.
No, it's all right. People, don't worry. I don't want a copy. I can watch it on Netflix. It's all right.
We're winking at each other right now.
Yeah, exactly. So you were going to the clubs in San Francisco. You see Slayton. You see Margaret Cho.
Yeah.
And then, what year is this?
God. Oh, well, yeah. When I was getting out of college, which was like... 2000, 2001. Okay. Well, I moved to LA the very end of 2000. So, but I started going there, you know, whenever I could, even before that. A guy named Alex Bennett had a radio show.
Okay.
And he had a live audience, and he always had comics on. So I would get up at 6 in the morning to go down there and be in his live audience. And Bobby Slayton was actually a frequent guest. And, it was me just trying to figure out, like you were saying, how do I get into this?
Right.
I think I want to do this. And then I got out of state, and I'm like, I knew I had to come here eventually and just try to create a timeline for myself in my head. I did all the stuff I could do up there in terms of independent film and doing stand-up, doing improv at Bay Area Theater Sports, which is like a thing up there.
Theater Sports is very big. Now, when you were doing the independent movies, were they shorts? Were you acting, or were you directing, or all of it, or what were you doing?
They were everything, and you know, some of them were shorts, some of them were very ambitious features that didn't have really the budget to do that. So,
so you
got this 90-minute learning experience, basically, like, okay, well, I was leading that, but don't know what that's about.
Right, okay. So you're doing it all. You're being real proactive. So then you decide you have to come to LA. Now, had you visited LA when you came down before? Or?
I did. I had a friend who had moved down before me. He actually played Red in my Shawshank Redemption adaptation. His name's Conroe Brooks. So he was down here, and you know, I saw he was doing well. And he was the only guy, I think, at the time I knew down here.
Okay.
So I would visit him a couple times and then just kind of made the leap. You know?
So when you come in here, so you get into town.
Mm-hmm.
Now what?
I started taking classes at the Groundlings with Cheryl Hines, who was fabulous, and then her career took off right after that with Curb Your Enthusiasm. And then I kind of took a bad 5-year detour.
Did you? Why? What happened? What were you doing?
Ooh, I don't even know if we have an hour for that, Steve.
Well, just put it in a nutshell. You know, put it in like a...
I took a lot of bad advice.
Okay.
I wasn't doing comedy. I kind of accidentally place myself. I'm being so vague now. Accidentally placed myself in a bad environment, pretending I wasn't aware of it, but I was aware of it.
Okay.
Yeah, which is just not healthy. And it's not what you. It's not like I was strung out in the street with a nail on my arm. It's not that. But it was a 5-year detour from what I really wanted to do.
Okay.
You know, and that was my path at the time.
I think it happens a lot. People come down and they get detoured. Now, what smacked you in the face and said, okay, you know what? I got to shit or get off the pot. I can't do this anymore. Was there a certain moment or you just said, you know what? Because you get some people say, you know, like Rich Aronovich was on. He's saying he knew he had to stop drinking when he did something with a cab and he got arrested.
Right.
And he said, I just went, I can't do it anymore. Was there a certain anything?
Yeah, well, for me, it was kind of like a bookend thing because right when I got to town, I did a showcase and I did a comedy scene, and I was somewhat courted by. I often get compared to Jim Carrey. Just
well, yeah, but you have the look, and then when you do the impressions, you look just like him,
right? And so his management company contacted me at the time, and I knew there was some interest, and that was like right when I moved here. And I kept in touch with them over the years, but I wasn't doing comedy. I just kind of kept in touch, email, hey, you know. And 5 years later, they called me in for a meeting, and I was in such a weird state that I didn't even think of it as a meeting. Like, I thought they just wanted to talk to me. I didn't even think of it as a thing of, like, we want to represent you.
Okay, so you were clueless.
I was inside. They literally snapped their fingers in front of my face, like, hey, we're talking about representing you here. And who cares? So I was in this acting class / cult-like atmosphere.
Okay.
And the person running that fought with me over whether I should go that path. And I wanted to. I wanted to do comedy. It's my life. I want to do what I want to do, right? And that was kind of the last straw for me. I'm like, look, I spent 5 years of not doing comedy. My whole life I've been trying to make people laugh. And it was, you know, not to get too overdramatic, but it was kind of creatively killing me.
Right, that makes sense, though. Yeah. You know, that totally makes sense.
Yeah, so that was that moment. So I jumped ship, and since then, I feel like I've been very motivated to do all the things that I always had ideas of doing.
Okay.
You know, and when I got out of there, basically, is when I started doing the Lenny Bruce doc and created that Christopher Walken impersonation show.
Now, did you sign with Carrie's people when they met
you? I didn't. See, the thing is, you know, they were like, okay, so give us all your stuff from the last 5 years, your stand-up, your sketch, all that. I'm like, guys, I haven't been doing that.
Okay, so they're like, well, then you weren't, I mean, okay. So
but it was fine. I mean, I was at a place anywhere where I was so excited about just doing my own things. To me, the tragedy was I wasn't doing what I really wanted to do, like my original idea. So I'm like, the Lenny Bruce documentary was a life-changing experience to have to go, not to have to go do that and interview comedians and go around the country and learn about him. It was amazing.
So, okay, so you snap out of the 5-year thing.
Right.
Now, how did you get the idea for the documentary about Lenny Bruce? Tell people what the movie's called, what it's about.
Sure.
Just give the background. I want to hear, because it's probably sort of like I Am Comic, where Jordan went and interviewed all these different comics.
Right.
But the difference is, you know, Lenny Bruce was influential in so many people.
Yes.
Know? So what did you come up with the idea? I mean, explain it.
Sure. The name of the film is Looking for Lenny.
Okay.
There's a website, lookingforlenny.com.
Which I love documentaries, so I have to watch it. That's what I love about the only reason I have Netflix documentary.
Right, and I had always had a vented interest in him. I mean, I had read the books and everything. I wasn't just one of those guys like, oh yeah, Lenny Bruce, yeah, comedian, he paved the way.
Don't you hate them?
And then you tap him, you're like,
say something.
Like, Lenny Bruce, he was a black guy, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's like the people always go, I mean, it's brilliant. I go, well, why is it brilliant? Yeah. Oh, because it's brilliant. Well, tell me why it's brilliant. I want to know.
Right,
people,
right.
Like, don't use the word brilliant. If it's good, say, hey. You know, I never say it's brilliant. It's so pompous. Oh, that movie's brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, come on. Why do you sing her brilliant? No, it's funny. So, okay, so you knew Lenny Bruce. You followed Lenny Bruce. You were a fan. Now,
I'd done a short film with the director a year before, produced it, and he was hired to direct this film. And they needed to take it in another direction because it wasn't really working out. So they kind of brought me in, and I was really, really motivated to get the interviews we needed to get to make it a real film.
But was it your idea?
No.
Okay, so they just you came in.
However, when I came in, we shifted it. like I, you know, I said I want to do this, but only if we go in this direction, because this is, right now it's kind of this quasi reality show, and also there'd been a documentary done about Lenny Bruce before, so how do we make that different from this? So
okay.
Our thing kind of focuses more on, it's like a little bit less biography on him and a little more what has happened since he's died, and let's look at that. What has his legacy left? Do we still have the same issues? How have they evolved or devolved or whatever, you know?
Now, how did you go about getting the interviews and traveling? Now, they brought you on. I mean, how did they find you, first of all? How was it?
The guy I had done a short. Okay. He directed, so he recommended me.
So then what was your role in the project?
Producer.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you came on, and then, so you're in there, and you must be excited.
Cause oh, yeah.
You know, especially after the 5 years, and just it's something you're doing what you want.
Yeah.
So you sit there, and now who books the guests? Do you book the guests, or does someone else
book
the
guests? Yeah, I just started hammering the emails, looking up publicists, phone calls, trying to figure out if this person knew that person, and most of it was just literally, I felt like Ari Gold.
Okay.
On Entourage, you know, like, hey, but, you know, a little more authentic, like not so swindly. Is that a word?
I don't know. I think we can. It's a real syllabism.
Thanks.
Okay.
Swindly.
Swarmy. Swarmy's a word. Swindly, I don't think.
Swarmy. That's a shawarma sandwich.
So you're calling these people. Like, who are some of the people you got for the movie?
Well, early on, I think one of the most exciting people for me early on was Lewis Black.
Okay, now how do you pitch them? I mean, I mean, right. I'm figure like me. I sent you my email. My email just basically says I interview host the show. I always say in a studio because else people think automatically it's a podcast because then they're showing up in someone's kitchen.
Sure.
Yeah. And then I list my guests, which I and that guy did that write up on my show.
Right.
So it makes me seem legit, which I'm not. I'm a fraud. I'm not even a comic.
No. Right.
But no, and that's the thing. So it's always in that letter, and a lot of people. It's weird that that's got me. So I mean, it's got me Tom Dreesen and Robbie Benson, and you're a big Robbie Benson fan. Which are you really?
He's a nostalgia guy.
Through open heart surgeries.
Wow.
Yeah, and he looks great. He looks great. I'm like, yeah. You're a dick. He was like, Val Victorian. I said, every girl loved you, and you were an athlete, and you were Val Victorian.
Right.
But so I said, and people reply. So how did you get Lewis Black? Did you call? Did you send email? You said you're doing calls, but did you email first? Because it's probably hard to get people's phone numbers, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know what I remember is that's what happened. See, first of all, I said, let's just interview who we can interview. And I had taken a stand-up class a couple of years before that for one night with Mark Lano.
That sounds familiar.
I think he still is part owner of the Improv.
Okay, yeah,
and
okay.
Over the course of that interview, I didn't even know that he was Lewis Black's manager. And he just enjoyed interviewing with us. And he actually said, hey, you guys want to interview Lewis? We're like, absolutely. So then we went to Vegas.
Brilliant. Lewis Black is brilliant. Oh. No, I mean, but I say that he actually is brilliant. Not like brilliant. I mean, the guy, and no one knows, he was a playwright first. And
he's
amazing. And he's a real smart guy.
Yep.
And he's 60. Like, he's not young.
Yeah.
You know, he got his break late.
He's
so
great.
I still have hope, people.
He's great. No. So we went to Vegas to interview him, and it was fantastic. Like, he actually interviewed him in his suite, and he he goes, after the interview, he's like, all right, guys, I'm going upstairs to take a nap. There's Coronas in the fridge if you guys want to hang out here for a while.
That's cool. So what kind of questions did you ask? What were some of the basis? I mean, because an interview, like for me, as I say, my show is very organic. I just come in, we talk. I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I have enough confidence. That's why I don't have comics do bits, because
mm-hmm.
I feel people like you looked interesting and different people. And I know if you've been on TV or you've done this, you're gonna be able to talk. I think most comics are like that.
Right.
And so I just let it flow and it goes anywhere. But for you, because it's very much shorter, like an hour, you can just go on forever. But for you, I mean, sure, the interviews are probably very short with Lewis, like probably like 2 minutes or 3 minutes. We got the film.
A lot of them gave us a lot of time.
Okay.
Which created a lot of editing later on.
But, yes, okay.
You know, basically talking about them, how they got into comedy, their influence of Lenny Bruce, because most of the people that wanted to do the interview really knew about Lenny Bruce, so they wanted to talk about him. And then also curbing that into freedom of speech issues. At the time when we were shooting it, you know, that's when all that stuff came out with Don Imus and Michael Richards. So there was a lot of very relevant stuff to talk about.
So you got Lewis Black. Now who else do you get? Now that was easy because that was dropped in your lap, which you can't pitch. That's a good drop in the lap.
Sure.
Lewis Black.
Yeah.
You know.
I think for me, I think where the team kind of went, okay, this was a good idea to bring me on. Right after that, I got Robin Williams, and that was, I took a totally different approach with that.
Okay.
Because growing up in the Bay Area, Robin Williams, also partially from the Bay Area, he's like a Bay Area guy. He lives there.
Right.
And
wait, lives there?
Yeah.
Okay.
So when you're a kid and you're growing up there and you see, and he's such a huge star at the time, you know, that's the guy where you go, if he can make it, maybe I can.
Okay.
So there was a lot of idleship. Is that a word? We're going to make it up words.
I know. It's going to be like the new, not the Urban Dictionary, the O'Sullivan Dictionary. People, you can get that at Amazon for $9.95.
But no, I did idolize him. And so I'm like, you know what? I'm going to write a note to his publicist, but I'm totally going to write it as me, as the fan, you know? And I say, hey, you know, the reason I'm in L.A., I mean, really, is growing up knowing that he made it, maybe I can, and, you know, wanting to do comedy, yada, yada. And I wonder if he'd do this. And they call me back a half hour later, and they're like, Robin wants to do the interview, but you have to go to San Francisco to interview him. I said, absolutely. And that's kind of helped us take off a little bit after
okay.
that. Yeah.
So you got them. So now you're getting all these interviews.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're not involved with the editing.
Not really.
Okay, so were you happy at the end? I mean, were you like, this is cool? I mean, was it fulfilling to you to do it? Was it? Because you weren't doing the acting, but you were still in the process.
Sure, it was great. And I think because it was a different project when we came on, and then it was something else in the end. You know, just us that made the film, we know that it was a little bit trying to fit a square peg into a round hole.
Okay.
And so I think we did a good job at that. And we kept it short. We didn't try to overdo it. It's, I think, 60, 70 minutes.
And that's, can you buy that on Amazon? Is that a lot?
Yeah.
There? Okay.
Yeah, it's out there. I think the one thing that really resonates with me, which ironically I wasn't there, but the director and the other guys interviewed Rob Riggle in New York.
Yeah, okay.
And they told me that when they interviewed him, he told them that he's like, hold on, what are you guys doing here? Guys, honestly, part of me would quit what I'm doing now to do what you're doing. It's like you're getting a PhD in comedy. And when they told me that, I was like, yeah, that's kind of what I feel like sometimes doing this. It was so great. I mean, I sat down with Robin Williams for an hour. I never thought I'd do that in my life.
Yeah, see, that's so amazing. It's like, that's yeah. something like we were talking before, yeah. like the guests I get, you know, it's like Rich Heidner, amazing yeah. comic. He comes to my Super Bowl party on Sunday. I'm like, yeah. that's exciting for comics, younger comics. Right. But he was huge. I mean, Tonight Show, Tonight, boom, right. boom. And you're like, wow. And then that's what I learned. I mean, I thought I know about comedy, and I learn from some of these people, you know, that come on that started before me, and just so many interesting stories when they were involved when the comedy boom was taking off,
yep.
and just they'd be on the road and they call, we open up another club, so they drive there, and they all making bank. It was back when people made money in comedy. Like,
wow!
Not, I mean, people, you know, I mean, when I used to do MC work, I used to make between 50 and 75 a show.
Oh, nice.
Back this was in, yeah. this was like ages.
I don't think people realize that because. You know, you're in L.A., you're doing comedy. Sometimes you're doing 7 nights a week. Man, how much are you getting paid for that?
Yeah, exactly.
Nothing.
I know, it's crazy.
Like, why do you do it? Well, you gotta get, it's competitive. You gotta be good, and you gotta stay on top.
So you get done the documentary, okay, mm-hmm. and now you're ready for film. So it shows you're back on your creative path. So
right.
where do you go now? What year is this, and what happens now?
This is 2006, and simultaneously I was creating the All About Walkin' show.
Okay, now where did you get that idea? How'd that come up?
I had that idea back in college. We used to hang out in the hallways and impersonate Christopher Walken, and it was me, a guy named Dan Carlos, and a woman named Amy Kelly. So when we were doing that, I'm like, well, what if I did a show that was men and women of all different backgrounds?
Is there a kid in it?
There's been kids.
No, because I saw you on a radio show. Look, like I was like, well, that's a kid doing walking.
There has been kids.
That's so funny. So, a kid doing walking.
So yeah, I put that up in a. And basically, I was working 6 nights a week at a restaurant at the time.
What restaurant?
Do we really want to plug them?
No.
It's called Mateo's. It's in West L.A.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, it's an old school Frank Sinatra.
They did a comedy out there for a while. Sean Morey booked it.
Did they?
Just about 8 months ago, and he just stopped running a little while ago.
Really?
Yeah.
So I was there 6 nights a week, and I was living in the maid's quarters of my friend's house. I was living in a room the size of most bathrooms.
Well, but does your friend have a huge house? Does he have a maid's quarter?
There was like six of us living there, so we were all renting the house.
Okay.
And I was so... I got out of that five-year ordeal. I'm like, guys, I literally have no money. And they're like, look, take the back room, $500 a month. It's cool until you get back on your feet. Great, great friends of mine, the Bosco brothers, four Filipino brothers. And so that allowed me to do that. And they used to just come check on me, knock on the door, and be like, what are you doing back here, man? I'm like... I'm watching all of Christopher Walken's movies, and I'm writing a show about him called All About Walken. And they're like, that's going to work? Yes, I believe it is.
So you really put yourself full force into this project.
Yeah, I turned a little psychotic on it.
That's you know, just Walken's great. Walken's great now in Suicide Kings, he said.
Yeah.
He's just you know, so out there. Like, it just adds. I mean, it's yeah. like, you know, and then when he does... Just when he was on Saturday Night Live, that stuff was so funny. Just when he dances on the in the Fat Boy Slim video, it's like so. It's like, you don't expect to see Chris, and he's good. That's the thing. Yeah. The guy's so talented.
Did you see Pennies from Heaven?
Yeah. Everyone just think, they just think he's a psycho, but he's not. He's a very rounded. Yeah. So you do it. So now, what is the story about? What is it about? What would you say the log line of?
It's kind of a merging of Christopher Walken and pop culture.
Okay.
You know, I mean, we use him as an avenue to get to other things. So, for example, in the show, I don't just play Walken. I play Jim Carrey. I play Adam Sandler. I play the ShamWow guy.
Yeah, your ShamWow is really good. I saw you. That's really good. I saw him. They actually did one. I don't know if you look it up on YouTube. It was from the Jimmy Kimmel Show.
Uh-huh.
And it was about how to get rid of all your scandals. And he says, got a prostitute? Sham. You know, and all these things. And it's hysterical. He's doing all these actors. You should check it out, because
awesome.
Your impression's right on. At first I was like, wait a second, he's not, and you look like him. And I mean, in real life, you don't, because you don't look like a douche, but I mean, but because the guy looks like a douche, I mean, but bikini frigini, martini,
morph the face. Yeah.
so you do, he's in it. So what is it? Just it's talking about, I mean,
yeah, so I mean, it's literally 23 sketches that are so short. And some of them are audience interactive. Some of it's multimedia. We have a short spoof we play on the screen. Some of it's songs. Some of it's dance. The kind of through line of it is I have De Niro picking Walken up in a taxi cab, and De Niro's the driver. So we kind of come back to that three different times, and that's kind of the one thing that's maybe story-based. We're like, oh, okay, they met, and then this happened, and then this is the end.
Okay, and then when you wrote it, you
mm-hmm.
finished it.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you go from there? Because like years ago, I had a sketch comedy trip, and my friend owned the Lillian Theater.
Oh, yeah.
And they had a little back room called the EOM Gallery.
Sure.
And I said, I want to do a sketch comedy troupe. And I sat there, and it's like anything in LA. People all want to work, but you go, hey, and they go, well, I don't know. I said, screw it. I said, hey. Don, give me a date. Give me like a date 2 months away. Because you can go in the back room. He said, I'll give it to you for, give it to you guys for, it's like $400 a month.
Right.
It's $100 each. It's nothing. We get Sharby, whatever, Wednesday.
Right.
Or, and we take the door. So at the end, I think we made $12 off it. But who cares? But I sat there, and that's the thing. I didn't know where to go, and I just started writing it. And then I put this, and I found a guy who now is a detective. Another guy who has an act. I found people who we just, I said, oh, they'd be good. My one friend was good at voices, you know, but they want to act.
Sure.
And so I got the idea, and we were called the Bitter Optimists, and we had this little theater, and it was awesome. And the thing is, you had to be proactive. So, like, what did you do? You had this play, because yours is a lot. Mine is basically four guys. I wrote the sketches, and I started letting them write. I directed it, but you don't really need directing and stuff like that.
Right.
And also, we needed a stage, and we just go up there. But for you, it's a process now, because you have the multimedia and the people. So how did you, when you got it finished, did you envision all the multimedia stuff?
No, it kind of evolved more into that. It was a little more simple when we started. It was 2006. Same thing. I was still broke, and I met a guy at Sundance who hooked me up with a guy who had a theater on Hollywood Boulevard. I went to him. I can't pay rent, but I really think people are going to show up to this, and we made a deal with the door. And he's like, you think people are going to come to this? I'm like, yeah, just give me Monday nights. And he gave me that, and it was amazing. Like 120 people every week.
How did you get the word out? Well, first of all, you went to the guy, and now did you know the cast, or did you audition people?
I auditioned people. I knew some of them. My idea was I wanted everybody's kind of interpretation of Walken, and I felt like an hour or so of dead-on walk-ins would be kind of boring.
Right, yeah, because it just...
So, my main objective is, I'm just going to cast funny people. So, I would cast people, and they'd be like, yeah, but I don't do a walk-in. I'm like, I don't care, you're funny, we're going to teach you one. And that was the way to go, because then you have, you know, men, women of different ethnicities, sometimes kids, and it gave the show, like, a lot of flavor.
So how did you start promoting it? Because you said it had 120 people. I mean, you didn't have money to promote, really.
Right.
And it was, I'm sure Facebook wasn't as big then, was it?
Facebook didn't exist.
Okay, so yeah, so you, I mean, it's so different now. So you really didn't have, I mean, how did the word get out?
I printed those postcards, and I went everywhere. You know, I stuck them under the copiers at Kinko's. So when you flipped open the thing, it was there. I mean, I did everything.
Real guerrilla.
Stuffed them in, yeah.
Real guerrilla marketing.
And also, it didn't hurt that every Monday night, there were no big clubs in that area at the time, Hollywood Boulevard. Every Monday night, people would drive down the street, and they'd see this lion. And go, what the heck?
What theater
is
was
that?
It?
It's called the Paul Gleason Theater.
And what street's that on Hollywood?
Hollywood and Wilcox.
Okay.
There was MySpace. But overall, I think it was basically word of mouth. It was a real unique event at the time. Rock of Ages, I believe, was across the street from us. And that's when they were just starting out.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you started running it, and so people started getting momentum. It was getting 120 people.
Yeah, like 120 people.
What did the theater hold? Like 100? Okay, six. Okay.
The fire department?
Yeah, okay.
But, yeah, around that.
So now how long did it run for?
We still do it sometimes. Probably consistently almost every week for about 3 years, and then less and less each year. And then in 2010, it took it to New York, and it did great. I've also taken it to San Francisco.
Now, were you in the production in New York?
Yeah, I went there.
Now, was that off-Broadway?
Yeah, Lower East Side. Is that called Lower East Side? St. Mark's.
Now, did you have to move to New York then?
Well, I was in a relationship in New York, so that kind of helped.
Okay.
It did help.
So, it's running for a while. Now, are you feeling residual effects from it? Like, are you getting momentum? Are people recognizing you? Are they saying, oh, we want to get this guy? Are you getting, I'm sure, did it help you get an agent and a manager? Or did
not
you already have
really.
That?
The thing about that show, I was learning how to do so many things at once. Like, how do I be an actor, producer, director, writer, door guy sometimes, all at the same time, and how to balance that. So even though it was very fulfilling that I created something unique, it didn't necessarily showcase me the best okay. as a talent, you know? But we did get...
But you wrote it, and right. you directed it, and you think that people go, wow, this guy's being proactive and making sure. stuff happen. I think that's like, that's more than just your showcase of acting. That's like, wow, this guy's got talent.
Right.
And it's successfully, basically, he has a track record.
Yeah, we were kind of working towards getting it on Broadway at one time with, okay. with a Broadway producer, but that kind of fell through. And then we actually got a direct booking, that was phenomenal, of this show called Free Radio, which started on VH1, eventually became a Comedy Central show created by this guy Lance Krall, and we were like booked as ourselves. We were sorry. I just acted like it was me.
That was me. Oh,
sorry,
I had the thing. It's too loud.
So we were booked as ourselves. We came on as the people in the All About Walking show, and that was a paying gig. You know, it was like, wow, we just got.
And was it, what was it called?
Free Radio.
Okay.
I think it ran for 3 seasons.
In VH1?
VH1 and Comedy Central.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So now after that happened, did you start getting recognized, or what's up with that? The people, like agents, man, anyone saying, did you have an agent yet? I'm sure.
No.
That's what's weird is you booked work.
Yeah.
And you didn't have an agent. Well, you were trying to get an agent, though.
Not as much because I was so involved in doing that. And then I actually, because you mentioned Nicholson, I created the All About Jack show, too.
Now, how long did that run?
I think almost a year or something.
In the same theater?
No, that was on Sunset and Western, Theater 68.
Okay, I've heard of that. I went to a production there a while ago. Is that right near, is that down near the complex? No.
No, it's a little bit up from
okay.
it. So I was doing that, the documentary, and yeah, for some reason, I've always had a hard time, even when I was just focusing on that, even when I was submitting to every agent, it was hard for me to get looked at.
You know what's weird about that? And it's so weird because you're very talented. And me, when I first came out here, I had been out of the business forever. And I got an agent. Mm-hmm. I sent 10 envelopes out. I got booked. But I was doing this, and I wasn't writing the comedy, but my agent's on this floor.
Yeah.
I said, there's a big agency. So I sent an email. I said, what's the guy's name? I go, hey, here's the deal. I've been done in a while. I do comedy once in a while. I do radio. Here's the deal. I'm talented. I have a good look. I went in. I didn't have headshots. Then I got signed. And my friends are like, you're a dick. I'm like, but things I don't pursue it because I'm concentrating on getting this blowing up.
But that is a key thing is you do have a look. And that's,
right.
That's,
yeah. I mean, I look like a creep.
Yeah.
No, that's they say. You're clean cut. You're a good looking, like, mid-middle America.
This is the thing. These are other people's words now. But I heard this direct quote so many times. They go, you're not good looking enough to play the good looking guy. And you're too good-looking to play the funny guy.
Doesn't that suck? It's like, and what do? You go, God, is that bad? Like, for me, they said, I can play a doctor, I can play a lawyer, I can play a creep, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm legally blind, I have a little bit of a crossed eye, I'm bald, and I mean, people, if Cal Ripken and Kragen from Law & Order SVU had a kid,
right.
I would be him. I mean, I do that in my act. I look like a bunch of different people. I'm a mixture of Larry David and Bruce Willis. I just have a different uniqueness.
Now I'm looking at you, Bruce Willis. As Bruce Willis.
Well, I didn't shave my head today.
Yeah.
I haven't shaved it for a week.
Like you're an actor.
So you're not getting an agent, but you're working. I mean, you have stuff. You're on TV. Right. Are you still doing the play when you're on TV?
What do you mean?
You said for the free ride.
That was one episode. So
okay.
Yeah.
So, but now you're, so you're, but you're, you got the play going, and you've done it in New York. And you said you did it in San Francisco, and so you're working. So it's like you probably don't really even need an agent.
Right.
Then we're making any money off it though. That's the thing, because so many productions you don't.
I know that people. It's hard to get people to understand that. It's so much of it is you're just pouring it back into it.
Right.
Renting theaters is expensive.
I can imagine.
And a lot of like insurance requirements and things like that, and the constant promotion. So yeah, and also the amount of work. I mean, the amount of work to put it up. It's crazy. Like that, you're every day trying to promote it, trying to, and you're freaking out, going, "Oh my god, only two people have bought tickets for this."
Isn't that the worst? I mean, I used to produce a show at Flappers called Cooper's Angels, and I hosted it, was all female comics, and I would freak because then I was like, "Well, then I was like, wait, you know what? What do I care, man? I said, I'm giving these girls a stage time. What do I'm the one. I'm like, I'm not making any money off this. Right. Well, I'm not going to sweat. They're not bringing people. The hell with them.
Right.
That's what happens. But yours is a big production. This is just a comedy.
Yeah.
So you're doing that. So you get done now. Why did you stop running it all the time? Was there a certain reason? Were you just tired of it? Or you think it ran
its course?
Yeah,
the crowds got a little less. Also, yeah, I wanted to go, what, man, I got to do something more for me as a performer. And that's what I really want to do. This was great. This is an idea I always wanted to do, and I did it. Great. And that's why it's still live. We do it two or three times a year. It's great. It's nice. But, yeah, I wanted to shift into that because it was taking over my life.
Right. Yeah, yeah. It was basically, so, and you weren't seeing the results you wanted. I mean,
right.
You were physically, inside it was great, but you're not making the cash, you know?
Right.
So then you, so now where do you go? Where do you transfer? Because I know you're on a TV show now, but what year did you say, I'm going to focus on me now, on just my acting?
That was probably 08, 09. That's when I kind of leaped back into stand-up, too.
Okay.
Because I'd been a dabbler, and I started writing a one-man show, which I do now.
Where's that at?
Well, I do it, I've done it here at Molly Malone's.
Okay. They have comedy now there.
Yeah.
Michael Cornaccio or something like that.
Yeah.
I just saw it on Facebook.
And I did it in San Francisco. I did that in upstate New York and Manhattan and Austin.
Now, what is the one-man show about?
It's called Young Sully, Stories from an Irish-American Youth.
Okay. That's a good title.
So it's kind of a tribute.
See, Young Sully.
Yeah.
Well, that's like your words. They're not O'Sullivanisms. They're Sullies. They're Sullies. They're Sullyisms. That's what it is. We started some new people, Sullyisms. The novel be coming out of Amazon. So you're doing it. So it's going back to your childhood?
Yeah, it's kind of a tribute to my parents' friends. So they have all these great Irish immigrant friends and phenomenal characters and the stories. I realize I've been telling these stories for years, and if I just put them together, they could be a show.
Right.
I finally did that. And the reason I usually do it at a bar is there's an element of where we toast each character after each bit.
So you do different characters.
Right.
How many different characters?
God, I think 27 or something.
Now, is it all comedy or is it up and down? Like, I always heard one-man shows have to have a little bit of drama in them. Because I was working on a one-man show when I waited tables about a waiter. And there's some stuff I wrote was really good, which my friends were like, wow, this is really good. It's serious.
Yeah.
You know, where you used to, you write jokes all the time. Because I used to write jokes for a website.
Yeah.
And it's hard for, you know, if you're from a comic background, you know. But you have to get the point. So, I mean, how do you string all the characters together? 27's a lot. I've been out doing 27 shots of beer.
It's just because I had been telling those stories my whole life, and there were people I knew, you know? So,
but how would you go from character to character in it?
Oh, well, we do the character, and then I go in and I grab the pint, and then the audience also has...
Is pints. It real beer? Are you drinking real beer?
And then, you know, we drink to Paul Cook, who's my godfather. He actually is the guy who called me Young Sully more than anybody. And then we drink, and then... So now, let's talk about, you know.
Okay, so you're doing that, and so then are you booking any other acting work at this time?
Well, you just reminded me, so I forgot about this. So when I took the walk-in show to New York, right when I came back here, actually I went to Hawaii and to do a small part in a movie, and one of the guys I cast in the walk-in show, he said, I got this email, this New York casting very specifically has been looking for Jim Carrey's photo double for a long time. They need somebody who can actually do his physical comedy. And it's a 3-month gig. And, you know, even though some people would say, oh, you shouldn't do that if you really want to act or whatever.
It's work.
And it, I listen to the world my whole life. Jim Carrey, I'm like, this is a chance for me to, for 3 months, kind of watch this guy. And I know I'm going to get something out of it. And you're going to get paid.
Right, exactly. It's a mentoring program.
Yeah.
It's you're learning. I mean, that's the whole thing.
Sure. So I went there. They dyed my hair black. I got it right away. And they dyed my hair black. And there it was. And it was an extremely impactful experience. The one thing I always tell people when I walk away from that is I go, I saw that guy every day. And he walks into anywhere he is and you could just see he goes, I'm going to make this my playground. And I'm like, that's what I got to do. So when I came back to LA, the first thing I did is I auditioned for that show Point Break Live, which is like the live version of
Point Break. I heard, okay, okay.
And I was actually called in to audition for the Patrick Swayze part, and it kind of goes back to the whole how people see me. We don't think you can be that funny because you're not funny looking, blah, blah. But I raised my hand and said I'd like to audition for the Gary Busey part. I got that, and I'd been doing that for the last couple of years, and that was phenomenal too.
Now, is that still running?
It isn't right now. That's, there's some... It's not right now.
How long did it run, though?
It actually started in 2003 in Seattle.
Okay.
But I was in it from 11 to 13.
And now how many nights a week were you doing it?
Saturday nights were packed, like 140.
Where was it?
At the Dragonfly, which is a crazy bar, atmosphere, nightclub.
Okay.
And it's very interactive. The thing about it is that an audience member plays Keanu Reeves, and that's kind of the whole shtick. So you're always on your toes dealing with them.
You know? I'm not a Keanu Reeves fan.
Yeah.
Because years ago when I was a waiter at Planet Hollywood in San Diego, I waited on his band Dog Star.
Oh, I remember them.
They were very cool, nice, really nice guys. A new girl I knew, and they're like, they got, of course, they're at Planet Hollywood. They comp mm-hmm. everybody. Bill's like $400 to comp 10 of them,
mm-hmm.
and they're like, dude, we got to take care of him. I was like, oh, I got it, man. He shakes my hand and gives me two bills. I'm thinking it's $200.
Yeah,
two crappy $1 bills.
Ooh,
I don't know if he made a mistake. That's why after that I said my girlfriend was out here. I'm gonna watch. I said Keanu Reeves does not go on my TV. And that's, he mails me $200. So Keanu Reeves, yeah. Twitter, at Cooper Talk. You say you're going to mail me $200, I'll like you again. So you're doing this play, so you're doing the walk, and you're doing Busey.
Right.
Now, how does Neighbors come along? I mean, because Neighbors was, it's, well, the one lead, the two guys, I mean, you're with Jamie Gertz, who, like,
right.
Anyone my age, we all had crushes on her less than zero.
Yeah.
Now, the two guys, where are they from? They look so familiar, the her husband and then the blonde hair dude.
Right. Lenny Venito, who plays her husband, he, I think, had a nice run of The Sopranos.
Okay.
I think he looks a little different from when he did then, though. So, I know that's what he'd previously been known for. And then Simon Templeman, who I love him, he's great, I think he just done a lot of guest stars and things like that.
Is he an artist?
Maybe.
As the one agent?
I think he was on news radio, and I know he does voiceovers because he has that very sophisticated British voice.
So how did it come about getting this show? I mean, okay, so were you booking, besides doing the Busey, were you booking commercials or anything, or what was going on? Were you going out for auditions?
I never really focused on that, and then, to be honest with you, 2012 came, and it just kind of blew my mind, the things that happened, because I did, at the very start of 2012, book this commercial, went to Puerto Rico to shoot that, came back, was doing Point Break Live.
What was the commercial for?
Boar's Head.
Oh, it's good, because I have a congestive heart failure, so I have to watch my sodium. They have low sodium turkey.
Do they?
No sodium turkey. I'm very good. I have some of that roast beef. I'm having for lunch when I get home. No lie, I love Boar's Head.
I actually auditioned for the new one yesterday, so maybe I'll be the new guy. Who
That'd
knows?
Be cool. So you went, you shot it in Puerto Rico?
Yeah, it was great.
So you're getting paid. They're flying you down. I mean, you're starting on your own play. You're like dipped in shit right now. You're
making
me so happy. That's been great.
And I mean, then the biggest shift that happened to me though is, back last April, I think, you remember they were trying to revive In Living Color?
Yes, yes. I know a guy, Corey Jacob,
okay.
auditioned for it.
And I couldn't get an audition. Same story. No agent. Just trying to pound the pavement.
So how did you get the commercial without an agent?
I got a commercial agent.
Okay.
Commercial agent, eventually. And pounded the pavement. Literally walked in one day. They wouldn't see me. And then I got this call where they said they already cast the show, but they're going to try to squeeze one more guy in. They're seeing another round of people, and they said what they were missing was the Jim Carrey element.
Okay.
Which to me all along I thought I wasn't going in for because I was too much like him. And they literally were like, sorry to do this to you, but can you come down here right now?
Okay. Well, yeah, so that, you're like, yeah.
Yeah. So I went down there, and long story short, they told me I was going to be on the show. Over the course of 2 weeks, I did this crazy. They're like, you need to do original characters, and I went on this rampage of filming in original characters.
Okay,
they sent it to Keenan Ivory Wayans, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh my god, this is happening,
right?
And then it fell through because, from what I understand, Fox would not allow them to add another cast member at that time. So, but for me as a performer, another show I grew up watching, going, wow.
This show never came out, though, did it?
No. They decided to not air it. it felt like such a stamp of approval.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And they got you on after it was cast. I mean, that's what's cool. So that doesn't work. Okay, so you're happy, but you're probably like, ah, damn it.
You right. Because like you anything. Know what? I tried to, because I knew I'd put the work in. You know what I mean? I knew I'd put the work in over the years, like creating these shows, doing the documentary, doing stand-up, one-man show, blah, blah. I'm like, this is just, something's got to happen now. This is like, this is a sign. It's not a negative thing. And then as things do happen to me unconventionally, I had a guy, an actor friend of mine, who he's directing another show I was in, which was Showgirls in Drag, which is the movie Showgirls done with drag queens.
Okay.
And I knew he had done an episode or two of the show Happy Endings on ABC.
Yeah, I like that show.
And
you were that, weren't you?
I was.
Okay.
So I said, Steven, I saw there's this like one line part on Happy Endings. Will you send my reel to the casting director? And he did. And she's like, he'd be really good for this alien show I have called The Neighbors. So I went in that morning, auditioned for The Neighbors.
And you don't have an agent?
No.
So people, it can't happen. We got a TV show network without an agent.
I know. I had a manager at the time, but that's the way that came about.
Okay.
And so I went in there.
Now, were you nervous? Because it's you're going network.
Man. You know what? It was my first television audition in 6 years.
Okay.
Other than the In Living Color thing. And I was just like, what do I got to lose? And I knew I had done so much work. Like, come on. I'm ready for this. So I felt really good about it. And it just felt like a fit. I was playing an alien. I'm a weird guy anyway.
Right.
So it just felt like a fit. I went in there. I felt really good about it. I felt good enough about it to go, hey, can I also audition for Happy Endings today? And they allowed me to. And I ended up getting them both.
So when you got the part on Neighbors, did you know it was going to be recurring?
No.
Okay, you thought it was just going to be one episode?
I shot one day, and as I was driving back, the casting director called me and said, you booked Happy Endings too. However, they're going to make your part recurring on Neighbors, so they're not going to allow you to do Happy Endings now. And then a month later, however, they gave me another part on Happy Endings, so it all kind of worked out. It was this whirlwind of, man, and the other thing I forgot, because I like to give people credit. I had done a lot of internet stuff with this guy Michael Gallagher. He did the ShamWow thing you saw and everything. Okay. And he's such a. I felt like, wow, I found this great young talent, and he's really taken off. We did a movie called Smiley, which comes out on DVD today.
Okay.
And that was another thing where, like, I almost felt like through him I was getting a little bit of a second chance to kind of be with somebody who understood me, and we could do a lot of comedy together, and had still had the energy, not the jaded.
Right. Right.
You know. So all that was happening, and it was just that movie came out in theaters around the same time, and it was awesome.
Now, what was it like?
It is awesome.
It's great. No, you did how many episodes? 6 episodes of Neighbors?
I did 7.
What was your character's name?
Johnny Unitas.
Okay, as I saw. Now, I saw part of the show once, but I don't.
Right.
I'm weird with TV. You know, my girlfriend watches TV all the time. Right. But I'm out and about or whatever, and
right.
But what was it like for you? Because it was funny, we went to Conan, you know, you're walking by the trailers. Did you have a trailer? Did you get...
The trailer, the first time, was very small. And then when we became recurring, we had bigger trailers.
So you basically just go and hang in the trailer? Is that what happens? Like, let's say, I mean, you must have been like, when they called you, you must have been euphoric.
Because
you're getting, when they called us, it's going to be recurring, you must have been like, holy crap.
Yeah. Well, the guys that run that show are so awesome. That was the other thing, going to that callback, going, man, I just feel like I can totally hang out with these guys, and they get me. And the show itself, in its nature, people don't know, it's an alien neighborhood, so
right.
It's a fun atmosphere. And going there, yeah, it was just amazing. And like one of the creators, Chris Koch, he walked by, I think, on the first day, he just kind of walked by me and the actress who plays Mary Lou Retton, Catherine Tokars, and was like, You guys know you're recurring now, right? Like, no. Well, yeah, you are. I'm like, what? What just happened?
Oh, wow. It's so now do you get recognized? Because it's
not
like,
really.
It's like, so, it's so weird because, like, some people, but as I said, you blend in with the crowd.
Yeah.
You know, because you're not good enough looking, but you're not ugly enough.
Yeah.
But, like, some people, like, when David Anthony Higgins was on his own Big Time Rush, he gets recognized, but he looks different. It's like that picture of my friend Gino, who's on, was on Pair of Kings.
Okay.
You're going to recognize the guy because he's half Slavic, half African-American, and he's like 6'4". You think he's a pro football player. But it, for you, I mean, but have you gotten recognized?
You know, I got recognized a couple times for happy endings, but I only did one episode. With The Neighbors, I still have a couple episodes that are yet to air.
Okay.
So maybe that's part of it. There was one time where I almost had that moment like, oh, finally, the bartender at this place, Three of Clubs on Vine.
I've done comedy there.
Oh, yeah. I'm doing it tonight.
They still do it?
They do it randomly now.
Okay. Who books it now?
Brian Swinehart.
Swinehart still does? Okay.
But the bartender, he comes and brings me a drink, and he goes, you're Johnny Unitas.
Oh, that's funny.
And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, I upload the pictures for the ABC.com website.
So you're like, damn.
Damn it.
So now, we have about 5 minutes left.
Okay.
Are you doing comedy a lot now, or do you have any shows?
Yeah, I mean, that's really been a focus of mine, is trying to, I love stand-up. You know, I want to be great at it, and I know that takes practice, obviously. So, yeah, this week, I mean, I'm doing Flappers on Friday. I'm doing the Improv again on March 7th.
Yoo-hoo Room?
Yes.
I'm doing Flappers tonight.
Oh, okay.
That's... The show airs tomorrow. So I'm doing it Tuesday night. Tonight, Wednesday night, people, I will be at the Rolling Stone Cafe right there on Sunset Boulevard. And all you people South Jersey listening, March 15th, I'll be at the Marlton Comedy Cabaret, and April 6th, two shows at the Sarcasm Comedy Club in Cherry Hill.
Wow, I got to get it down like that. How do you do that?
What?
You just said your whole gig. I was like, yeah, Flappers Friday, March 7th.
I don't perform that much anymore. You know, I'm very succinct. So what else is coming? What other stand-up? What other venues?
Yeah, just a Comedy Store, I think, February 23rd. You know, you can follow me on Twitter and find out my show.
What's your Twitter?
Trick Sully.
Trick Sully. Like spell it.
Patrick Sullivan. Okay. TRICKSULLY.
Do you have a lot of followers?
No.
Really? I hired a social media guy because I had like 3,000 followers. I had this guy, he was supposed to get me 2,500 followers. Something happened. I woke up today, I have 14,000, and they're not bots. So now I have 14,000 followers on Twitter. At Cooper Talk, people. At Cooper Talk. I'm always writing jokes. I'm always writing funny stuff. I don't promote myself. I just write funny stuff, which I love because it makes you write because you have to keep everything condensed.
Yeah.
But if you bitch on Twitter, like my girlfriend had a problem with United, you bitch, and then everyone sees it, and they'll write back to you.
Right.
They follow you, they send you an email, like Virgin America did that. It's amazing. So The Neighbors, when's that air?
Then my next one is February 20th, which I'm very excited about because it's the Oscar week episode, and then it airs Wednesdays at 8:30, and then I'm also on March 13th, which is our musical. I get to sing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's great.
Is it different? I mean, you're coming from doing plays and all that. Is it really different when you do this? Because I'm sure you're not acting as much. Like, because you're in the play, you're always acting, going, thing. Now, okay, shoot, relax, shoot. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, like, you go in, how long's your day when you go in?
It depends. Like, sometimes they'll bring me in for a gag and I'll be there 3-4 hours. And sometimes they'll bring me in for a week and I'll be there, you know, all day and night, the whole week.
Does it take a long time, some of the shootings? Is it like?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, the musical was an epic episode. But it's so fun. I mean, everybody, we get along. It's amazing. Like, you mentioned Jamie Gertz. That woman is, I could talk to her for 20, 30 minutes about anything. Like, she'll give me life advice, talk to her about sports. She's amazing.
I saw her on Good Day LA. She seems really, have you ever been on Good Day LA?
No.
They should put you on.
Oh, okay.
You're on the show. Why not? Put Patrick O'Sullivan on, people. He'll do some Sullyisms. So now you don't have a website?
I don't have a website.
You need to get one of those
Facebook
websites.
Facebook.
Yeah, because, you know, your clips. So you can go to YouTube, people, and check them out. And right. Do you still do Bar Lubitsch?
I do. This is on Wednesday, so that would be tonight, technically Wednesday. And we're having our special Love Edition show. We're auctioning off a date with comedian Gabby Conte.
Okay, I know her.
Okay.
She's Emerson. Like, they'll have, like, yeah, one more person from Emerson. So funny, all these people from Emerson. The one girl who was from Emerson who hated it was Jen Kirkman. She's the biggest of all of them. That's what's funny about her. So anyway, I want to thank you, Patrick.
Thank you.
Give your information one more time to the people.
Sure. So it's Trick Sully, Twitter, TRICKSULLY.
Do you tweet a lot?
I do.
Okay.
And, you know, I'm on Facebook, and watch The Neighbors, because it's a fun show.
And you can get at Looking for Lenny.
Oh, Looking for Lenny, yeah, on demand, iTunes, all that.
Check it out, people. I'm going to watch it tonight, I think. I'm going to watch it before my show, because my show's at 9:30 at Flappers. I'm going to make dinner, put on the stream, and I stream the Netflix to my TV downstairs, and it's perfect.
Nice.
I think I love documentaries, so I think I'm going to watch that. And anyway, I want to thank you so much. Please look him up, people. Go to Facebook, follow him. He's a very funny guy. Watch The Neighbors. It's The Neighbors. Anyway, people, I want to thank you for listening. Here's how you get in touch with me. You can send me an email at cooper Indy100.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Cooper Talk. Facebook, I just created a fan page for the show, Cooper Talk. Look it up. I have so many photos of the great guests I've had, which I've been blessed to have. If you want to hear past episodes, go to www.coopertalk.net. Also, iTunes, Cooper Talk One Word, as Stitcher Radio, Cooper Talk One Word, as TuneIn Radio, Cooper Talk One Word. Also, check out my blog, cooperthought.com. I write 5 jokes a day. And remember those shows tonight, Rolling Stone Cafe, March 15th, Comedy Cabaret in Marlton, and Sarcasm Comedy Club in Cherry Hill, April 6th. I want to thank you for listening, people. You have a wonderful weekend. Don't drink and drive, because it's stupid. And I'm Steve Cooper. I'm only as hip as my guests, and I'm going home to eat lunch.